Okay, last round today, I want to talk about social networks. And I want to start station, and you can guess how, by figuring out with you what data sources do we have in order to collect a network. Just to be clear what a social network is, social network is just a group of individuals, and they have some idea about how strongly they are. You can draw this in a graph. History is that about Stanley Milgram, it must be in the 60s, he said, how many steps are people typically apart from each other in the world? And so we had some postcards, which I think was Midwest, and had people send them out. So let's say some guy on some farm in the Midwest, and he wants to send something to Singapore. So how does he go about it? And he found out that typically there are no more than six steps involved. And that's where this famous saying, 6 degrees comes from. So that is sort of one motivation that we think, wow, you know, how interesting. The world is smaller than we think. Small world theory is another one. So what I want to do now is, having some vague notion of what social networks are, I want to get from you some ideas of how can get data about the proximity of people. Proximity in that sense. And I just could, and then we organize together. So, email traffic. And I will give you lots of pointers here, because this is not work which only happened in the last 2 years. The canonical paper on the email traffic is by Mike Schwartz, and was written when he was at the University of Colorado, CU Boulder, in the late 80s, where he got data. Those few email places which were done in the mid-80s, like Berkeley and other places. And then he, based on email to whom, he made recommendations saying, hey, you really should meet that person. You really should send email to that person. So many people who you know and who he knows and you have never communicated. And then he tried it out. And it turned out these people were all delighted by the people they got these automatic introductions to. So that was based on email traffic. Old paper, ACM paper 88, something like that. The other paper here on email, as you suggested, is work by, I forgot his name, I just had it before, Mark Smith, from Microsoft Research. He's also visiting the University of Washington, Seattle, where he looked at, within Outlook, within Exchange Server, he used, not as a discovery process for Mike Schwartz, but for getting to deal with the information overload problem. So the thinking here is that most of your email reading is probably time driven. So you get that ad about that really good stock, or you know the email I told you about, you know, from my friend in Nigeria, I could help him out with it. You know. So can we do better than you know that? So for instance, Dan, through a friend of mine, former PhD of mine, Chris Perkner. And so Dan had never sent me an email. So I would say, you know, Dan Olson. But because Chris, I really, really highly, highly believe in his judgment, the fact that Dan actually knows Chris, some system in somewhere in the world knows, means that if Chris says, I should talk to Dan, it just pops up right above the penis enlarging the Nigerian stock deals. So how can we use the behavior to whom in order to come up with the ranking? Now, if, on the other hand, Chris kept on sending me emails and actually reading them, delete them, then, you know, Dan might not be in luck, because some guy whose emails I don't want to get is going to recommend some guy to me. So I'm interested in somebody like that versus some guy who I devour every email I get from. So that is behind Mark Smith's idea of using email behavior to basically, based on header information alone, get rid of spam. Because chances that somebody sends you an email who none of your friends know, and that's something super precious, are pretty low. Okay, so much for email. What's the next one? Who's that? Yeah. By the way, who of you does IM? Okay, interesting. So, Ari list, Dan, what do you mean by that?
Well, like if your AIM or your Yahoo is basically like the people that are on your list already. So I guess you could go further and see how much you're actually talking to them, like you're saying about the email stuff.
Right. Talk to the EVP of something at Reuters. And we talked about IAM. And I wanted to know. So, by the way, I don't really do IAM. He explained to me why. Because he said, Andreas, people above 40 do IAM. And people from Germany, they don't do IAM. So there are really two strikes against you. I'm not surprised that you don't do IAM. Reuters had no luck selling their product in Germany. Okay. What's that? I'm just quoting. There are always exceptions in Germany, 80 million people. Of course, there are some people who do IAM. So another thing he said is that for IAM traffic, you can't get to social networks. And I could find the paper for you. It is about 20 people, I think. People tend to IAM with regularly. 10, some small number, very countable number. Then there is another circle which they do IAM with maybe once a week. And then the rest of their IAM list, they actually have on the list and they never actually deal with. So it is a very sort of a three circle approach that from the social network in the IAM. So should we just lift the battery list? Should we weigh this with actual use? Now, it is a beautiful example of how, if we collect more data, we can do a much better job. Example, Yahoo. Some people at Yahoo were bugged by, you know, random people saying, hey, somebody wants to talk to you, and they don't know who these people are. Or just somebody saying, hi, what's up, or whatever, you know, people do on IAM. And so apparently they try more information from that person by trying to tell them why this person who they never talked to before, wants to talk to them. It must be, hey, I'm a receptionist, and somebody is downstairs and claims that they want to see you. So what is actually of interactions IAM? Who initiates the interactions? Who responds? Initiation. Response. When you talk about, and I just jump ahead here, social networking sites such as LinkedIn, if you have possibilities of contacting people directly, such as OpenBC or Xing has, then Xing cannot be responsible for the quality of the person. You know, if we say, I'm a really good doctor, you know, Xing's business is not to assess whether you're a good doctor or not. But what Xing can do is it can build a model of its probability over a given point in time, because that's the data they have. So if somebody hits you up there and you immediately, then you might be very good here in your response probability. And that might be a way to characterize you as a member of the social network. Also, from my experience in dating sites, there are, when you look at Gator conferences, there are people who constantly initiate conversations and would never initiate, but they might respond right away when somebody hits them up. So these are actually very different properties which are not to be linked together, but both are properties of the person on the social network. Okay, what other things, what other data would we have here? Yeah?
Blog
entries. Okay, blog. What do you mean by that? The response to blogs, comments?
Comments, if there are bloggers themselves.
Yeah. So the commenting behavior is certainly public behavior. Any other social networking aspect you can derive from blogs? Totally. What about one of our favorite sites, Facebook? What can we derive from there? Since most of you are on Facebook.
Who appears in the same pictures together?
Okay.
Who is in one of those little groups together?
Why do you say little groups?
Excuse me. Guess I'm not a member of one of the emails.
Okay. Now, note also the interesting question about asymmetries in social networks. So, trust, I believe, as one of those things with two slots, is a very deep relationship. And one of the things which I've thought about is making that asymmetry, extracting that asymmetry from people explicitly. So, on a social network, on Facebook, on a professional one, whatever you want, you could ask people, you could ask users to rate the trust of they have in the. That of course rather be private, because I think lots of damage would be done if you make it, you know, public. Now you can see who are the people who just attract the trust of the world. And our trust sinks, you know, lots of trust, not much trust gets out of them. Would you want to normalize that away? Would you say, ah, that person is just not a very trusting person? Or would you think there's something up with those guys? What would you do with that?
Well, I think there's maybe you could have one way of telling it. You can block certain, so if this certain someone is being blocked by many different people, that would tell you something.
So use it taking auto blocking. Blocking, you said?
Yeah.
Okay. Blocking is a hard thing. The soft version is ranking. I'm a big fan of, you know, soft versions as opposed to hard versions, yeah. Okay. What other data can you think about for social networks?
So within Facebook also, initiation and response.
Initiation of?
Friendship.
Okay. Yeah. Relationships of friendships, or you can look at potentially it's so difficult to talk and listen talk at the same time. You could also use that information, you know, how you knew somebody, why you just hooked up randomly, and you could use that as an attribution of people met in class or whatever the options are. What other way do you think of how we can create social networks? What data can we collect? Yeah, so the phone, when you say entries, what do you mean that? The stored numbers? That's one. Of course, again, the point comes, and you see this again and again, the weighting thereof. How could you weight that? Yeah, by calling. What other things do you have? Yes, so by call initiation. If you're the one who calls the other person, length of button. But also, I mean, my phone has this button of pushing somebody to voicemail. So the people you want to talk to, do you push? I see everyone's laughing here, that's funny. It seems to be something which, you know, people tend to, not that one again.
Whether you answer,
yeah, right. Answering, you don't want to have this thing ringing. So waiting by not responding, by non-response, where non-response can be that, you know, you left the phone at home and it's just ringing and you don't hear it, versus a much more thing is if you push that button, I don't want to hear from him, by explicit SMS. Is another one. Did we have the mobile phone, which you said sufficiently, or were there other things about mobiles?
No, that's, sorry, calendar and email lists.
Email lists specifically, okay. So I'll add this up here, email traffic, also email lists. Do people still have email lists, or have this been replaced by RSS feeds by now? Yeah, people still use that, you know, 100 people get to know that, whatever, okay. Their email lists seem to be funny because email is great for one-on-one, one to very few communication. email doesn't have intrinsically a ranking function. And probably in some things you don't have a ranking function. So there should be a phone-like thing where if you really wanted to ring, it rings. What the other person does with it, the other person does with it. But you have, you know, 200 people, we talked about you subscribing 200 something RSS feeds. Then ranking becomes absolutely. And so mailing lists, email mailing lists should actually very much, I think, move to RSS when used. Why? In RSS, you can use the collective behavior of the group to determine where something should be. So if something gets out to 100,000 people in your organization and who deletes it, who reads it, then slowly the importance of that article should actually move down. Versus in email, you know, it's real business what you do with your email. I think these are very different things and they should not be confused. Lastly, no, time is really a thing, usage. You could do the hard blocking, the soft ranking, but more importantly, I think, is the topic of viral marketing. So a few sentences to that, as what has to do for today, is viral marketing at its essence means if you're dealing with something which is a communication device like Skype. Skype is an awesome example for that. That, hey, if you want to talk to me for free right now, you better download Skype. That's a huge incentive for me, for you actually to do that, because you get something right immediately then. Viral marketing, essence, has so-called network effects. Then it works really well. Now, if you go back to biology, what do viruses do? Viruses do host, because if viruses kill the host, that's not good for them in the long term. So they are as, you know, innocent as possible for the host by spreading themselves as much as they can. So we had a whole class last year on viral marketing, and the essence was, if you have a product and you think about viruses, really think about them of attaching themselves to the communication part of the project, of the product you have. Okay, we are out of time. We have to get off the air at 6:05. Let me thank you. Let's again, you know, thank you for coming out from Google. If I still have questions, I think we are still around for a few minutes. Next week will be very different. Next week will be a very standard lecture, which will be just on one thing, namely building recommender systems. Okay, thank you so much, and we'll talk next week.
And what are the guys doing this week's class? So can you guys just read amongst yourselves?